T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Baseball is back, and so is MLB.tv. Watch every out-of-market, regular season game on your favorite streaming devices. Anywhere, anytime, all season long. Follow the action live or on demand. Track 4 games at once with multi-view mode. And catch up with in-game highlights. Plus, original programs, minor league broadcasts, and local pre- and post-game shows. Go to MLB.tv to start your free trial today. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
All right, we're with you until 1 a.m. If you want to join us, 617-779-7937. Patriots still on the table if you want to get into the quarterback situation going forward. Certainly welcome to weigh in on that. I do want to get into the Celtics as they played their first preseason game on Tuesday night, and they'll have their first regular season game a week from, I guess technically today, a week from Wednesday. Unbelievable that the season is here. I feel like they just ended in the season is right here. One note from the game tonight, I'm not going to get into particulars, but one thing from tonight that stood out to me, and it wasn't even about the game in particular. Now, Embiid was great. He had his 18 points, although the guy you brought in to essentially cover guys like Embiid, Tristan Thompson, was unavailable for the Celtics with a hamstring issue. And in all likelihood, he's not going to be ready to go on opening night against Giannis Antetokounmpo and the Bucks. So that's great. But anyway, getting back to the original point as it pertains to the game tonight, one thing that stuck out to me is that Philadelphia team for all those years, you always knew you had the advantage with the coach, right? Brad Stevens was a much better coach than Brett Brown, and he is a much better coach than Brett Brown still. And they were the one team in terms of the contending level teams. Now, I guess the Nets are a different situation because they obviously right now have Steve Nash as their head coach, and we got to find out what he is as a head coach. Remember Kyrie Irving? Kyrie, by the way, he walked back those comments. He walked back his comments where he said, we don't need a coach. Like, you could be the coach one day. You could be the coach one day. Now he says, hey, since I got into the building and I've talked to Steve Nash, two-time MVP, he's the coach. Well, congratulations to Kyrie. They have a coach. But Philadelphia, for all these years, whenever the Celtics played them, it's like, all right, well, if you got into a potential playoff series, and we saw it happen before when the Celtics didn't have Kyrie and they didn't have Gordon Hayward, and they still beat the Philadelphia 76ers, a lot of that had to do with coaching. Brett Brown was horrible. They went from having Brett Brown as their head coach to Doc Rivers, a guy that has won a championship, and we all remember that championship. And you can give me the 3-1 deficit last year against the Denver Nuggets. There's something broken about that team. You had Paul George and Kawhi Leonard basically doing whatever they wanted within the organization. I mean, that was a joke. That was a dumpster fire. And look, maybe Ty Lue gets it right there. But Doc Rivers, I think we can all agree, is a really good head coach. Even if you are going to say, well, he's not the best coach. Fine. I'm not telling you he's the best coach in the NBA. But he can at least go back and forth with Brad Stevens. And in fact, if you look at it, Doc Rivers' resume is more impressive than Brad Stevens' resume. So all these other East contenders, now that Philadelphia has a coach, Miami has Eric Spoelstra. We all saw what a great coach he was last year when the Celtics and the Heat went head-to-head. And in fact, you could argue that Spoelstra outcoached Brad Stevens. I mean, how many times are they going to run the pick-and-roll, and Brad Stevens was not going to be able to figure out a way to how to stop that defensively, right? And they were able to expose the Celtics' weaknesses. How many times did Kemba or Jimmy Butler take Kemba Walker off the dribble? Or I should say Goran Dragic and Jimmy Butler, they would get Kemba matched up with them and just take him to the rack because Kemba was obviously hobbled and not the same guy that he was at the beginning of the season. But more importantly, that's going to happen going forward because Kemba has a bum knee, but they took advantage of that. We've seen Nick Nurse win a championship with Toronto. And last year, remember, they were the number two seed in the Eastern Conference. They overachieved based on their talent level, and they took the Celtics to 7 games. So they have a championship-level coach with Nick Nurse. Eric Spoelstra with the Miami Heat. So you start to look around Mike Budenholzer, two-time coach of the year. I'm not telling you coach of the year is the be-all, end-all. And I do have questions about, well, are you actually going to play your guys more minutes in the postseason? Like, Giannis needs to play more minutes when they get into the postseason. But we would all contend, or we would all agree, that Budenholzer's a good coach. He's beaten Brad Stevens in 2 different playoff scenarios. Now, he had the advantage from a talent perspective, but he's still beaten Brad Stevens twice. But all these teams now in the Eastern Conference, The Nets, notwithstanding, because we got to see what Steve Nash is, although you can make the argument, and I would, that they have the most talented roster when you look at Durant and when you look at our old friend Kyrie Irving and LeVert and Dinwiddie. I mean, that's a loaded team. Joe Harris hitting threes, right? You could argue they have the most talented team. So even the team with the least experienced coach, they have the most talented roster, which is really the most important thing in the NBA to begin with. But the one team that didn't have a good coach that would be considered a legitimate bona fide contender in the East, they've actually upgraded. And the front office, remember, they brought in Al Horford to play with Embiid. It made no sense. And you bring in Daryl Morey, and he's trying to fix things there. He brings in Seth Curry to help with the shooting, gets rid of Al Horford's contract. And now the roster looks to make a lot more sense with Ben Simmons and Joel Embiid, where you surround those guys with shooting. 617-779-7937. Let's get to Jack in Providence. What's up, Jack?
Hey, how you doing? A couple questions. One, I'm a season Celtics ticket holder. Last year, obviously everybody would go nuts when Taco would come out.
Oh yeah.
He seemed to put on a good amount of weight. Do you think they're going to keep him or get rid of him through right after preseason? You think?
He's not going to play any major minutes for the Celtics this season. A guy can't move. He's a statue out there. He can't move whatsoever. So I don't expect him to be contributing to the team whatsoever. Now, maybe he'll be dressing for some games because he got injuries in terms of Tristan Thompson. But I don't envision Taco Fall being any major contributor to the Celtics team. Not this year, not next year, not ever. Let's go to Philly's in New Bedford. What's up, Phil?
Hey, Brian. Hey, first of all, real quick, BB, being better. Okay, your initials. The first 6 or 7 years of the Patriots, the first three championships after that became quote unquote the Patriot way. Belichick.
Okay.
The Patriot way, the expression Patriot way. It was Belichick, Brady, and the Crafts, no matter what they had to do to work with them and how voiceful Kraft was always, my boys, they're great, they're great, they're great. Well, where was Mr. Kraft or any of the Krafts been this year during a situation, which means the Czar Belichick has, in one way or another, either been the flaw or the greatness?
Yeah, but hold on, Phil.
Does that make sense?
What would you want the Krafts to do this season? Like, what would you want them to do? I don't understand that.
I would want them to step in with Bill in the off season, not just this season, and say, we know you're the GM, we know the coach, but things are so much different, not just because of COVID in the season. Listen to people and draft better, because he really hasn't in the last few years. Success breeds success, but you're not successful in being a general manager. Does that make sense?
Yeah, but I don't get what you want them to do. Just tell him that he's got to be better. I'm sure Bill knows that he's got to be better in terms of his drafting. So
no, he's got to listen to them because they've been successful.
Listening to the Krafts?
They have implemented whatever he's wanted and they've made it work.
But Phil, the Krafts can't help him in terms of his football decisions.
But the Patriots' way couldn't survive without all three elements, correct?
Yeah, I agree, Phil. I appreciate the phone call. I agree. You needed Robert Kraft here to be the owner of the team in order for this all to work. And I'm not diminishing Robert Kraft's role, but Robert Kraft's not going to tell Bill Belichick, you got to draft better. Kraft knows Bill has to draft better, and Bill knows he needs to draft better. And in fact, Kraft knows he's not going to get in between Bill and the decision-making process, because that's already happened here. Do we remember the Bill Parcells era and how it ended? Like, both guys have admitted that it could have worked out better. Obviously, I mean, you went to the Super Bowl in 96 and then Parcells is gone. I mean, it's a mess. A mess. So Kraft's not going to tell Bill Belichick how to do his job. He stepped in a couple of situations that he needed to. The Brady situation in 2017. Other than that, he's not going to step in a lot of situations in terms of the decision. Antonio Brown, he stepped in with the whole legal situation. Like, that's when Kraft's going to get involved.
They want you to cook the dinner. At least they ought to let you shop for some of the groceries.
Yeah.
Okay?
Thanks, Bill. And, by like, look, I understand Belichick, he's had some drafts that you're like, okay, what's going on here? He's had some decisions that have not been great in terms of the personnel. I'm not telling you that he doesn't need to get better, but I don't think Robert Kraft telling Bill that he needs to be better is going to do this team any benefit. I'm not diminishing the Kraft's role. Obviously, it's a major role with the team. They owned him. They owned the team. But Kraft giving like a pump up speech to Bill or telling Bill he's going to be better. I mean, what does that do? Bill knows he needs to be better. Anyway, I want to get back to the Celtics for a second. So I saw this number. Jonathan Charks from The Ringer put this stat up. So last season, in terms of touches per game and time of possession, I know it's a deep stat and it's a stat. So everyone's like, oh, yeah, stats, blah, blah, blah. But anyway, how about this stat for the Celtics? So in terms of touches per game and time of possession, and the reason I lay this out because I got a big prediction for you. So Kemba Walker last year led the Celtics in touches per game at 70.8. He had the ball for 5.9 minutes per game. So his time of possession, almost 6 minutes. So the ball in his hand for about 6 minutes a game. That led the Celtics. Second in that category was Jason Tatum. He only had the ball in his hands for 3.5 minutes a game. So way down from Kemba Walker, and his touches were down for Kemba Walker or from Kemba Walker as well. So Kemba was the guy 6 minutes in terms of time of possession. Jason Tatum, only 3.5. Okay, now you look at Jason Tatum going forward, those numbers are going to go up significantly, right? Because Kemba Walker is not here. Kemba Walker is not going to be part of the, well, he is here, but he's not going to be part of the equation at the beginning of the season because of the knee thing. Gordon Hayward is now playing for the Charlotte Hornets. So that means the time of possession, the touches, Jason Tatum's going to get a whole lot more. And Jason Tatum is going to have to be the main creator and the main ball handler on a lot of units for the Celtics team this season. So I say all that to say this. We know the opportunities are going to be there for Jason Tatum. He's going to have the ability to create stuff. He's going to be able to run the offense. Unlike last year, because let's be real about last year. Entering the season, we all assumed that Jason Tatum, or not we all, most people believe that Jason Tatum would be the number two option. And that Kemba Walker, the max contract player, although I told you a million times I never wanted Kemba Walker. But anyway, getting back to the original, and this isn't me second guessing. I said it the day he signed, I didn't want him. But anyway, getting back to the original point, Kemba was the max contract player. He was coming off an all-NBA season in Charlotte. People expected him to be the man. So then Jason Tatum fit in after that. But it wasn't like at that point he was so far ahead of Jaylen Brown or he was so far ahead of Gordon Hayward. And we couldn't possibly say right away, okay, you know he's going to develop into a top 15 player in the league, right? That wasn't assumed. Now he is a top 15 player in the league entering this season. So Tatum has now emerged as a star-level player. This is now, and I know Brad Stevens said this is Boston's team, but this is now Jason Tatum's team. Every decision that Danny Ainge makes, he should be asking himself the question, how does this work with Jason Tatum, our max, super max player? So Jason Tatum's the guy. Jason Tatum, he's going to lead this team in terms of time of possession. He's going to lead this team in terms of touches per game. So I say all that to say this about Tatum this year. Based on the fact that you don't have Kemba Walker, based on the fact that you have a thin bench, based on the fact that you don't have Gordon Hayward. So basically, it's Tatum, it's Jaylen Brown, and then who's third in the pecking order? It's Marcus Smart, right? But most of these guys after Tatum and Brown, they're role players. Tristan Thompson's going to roll to the basket. He's going to catch alley-oops. Marcus Smart, you're hoping he doesn't take as many shots as he had like in the postseason last year where he took way too many shots. He took 22 shots in an elimination game. And when he took more than 13 shots per game, the Celtics were 2-5 in the postseason. You're hoping he chills on the amount of shots that he takes. Nesmith, when he gets burned this year, he's going to be coming out. He's going to take shots. He's a shooter, but he's not going to have the ball a lot in his hands. He's not going to be creating opportunities. Jeff Teague's in there to maybe run the second unit. Whatever his role is going to be, it's not going to be taking attention or taking shots away from Tatum. So this is without question Tatum's team. He's going to have more opportunities to create offense, to score, than most other players across the league. He's never had an opportunity like this, and he was still growing up in the league, but now this is his team. So when I look at Jason Tatum this year, and I look at all the opportunities he's going to get, the bigger role he's going to play, he comes into the season as the guy coming off just getting that max contract extension from the Celtics where he can earn almost up to $200 million if he becomes all NBA again. When I look at Tatum, here's my prediction. He is going to be the MVP of the NBA this season. And here's why. I got a lot of information here. There we go. MVP. MVP. And that's not to say he's the best player in the league. We see it all the time. It's not always the best player in the league that wins the MVP. Heck, Steve Nash, look, great player, but he won back-to-back MVPs, right? When you just look at it from this perspective, at the age of 21, he averaged 25 points per game, 10 rebounds per game, 5 assists, a block, and a steal a game in the postseason. The field goal percentage was not great in the postseason, went down to 43, And the three-point percentage still relatively good at 37, but the attempts were up 40% from three during the regular season. So in the playoffs last year with a more advanced role, like I remember thinking back at Jason Tatum in the postseason, I'm like, yeah, he was good, but he wasn't great. He averaged 25, basically 26, 10, 5, a block and a steal at 21. And I remember thinking he didn't play great, and you're thinking it's only his third year in the NBA. And oh, by the way, the assists up to five, he only averaged three during the regular season. So he became a better creator for other people once he got into the postseason. I'm not saying he's the perfect player, but the playmaking got better in the postseason, and that's what he's going to have to do this year as the alpha of the team, right? As this being his team. So when you look at MVPs, Giannis, in terms of field goal attempts per game, Giannis is the outlier at 19. He took 19 shots per game last season, and the Bucks are running away with games. I mean, they won a million games last season, the past 2 years, really. Okay, so he gets a bunch of dunks, 19 shot attempts per game. But look at recent MVPs in terms of the NBA. James Harden's MVP season, he took 24 shots. He had Chris Paul on his team. Russell Westbrook took 24 shots per game when he was the MVP of the NBA. So when I look at Jason Tatum, who's taking shots away from him now? See, this used to be the problem with the Celtics organizationally is, as I call him, Brad Bernie Sanders Stevens. His offense, it's an egalitarian offense. Everybody gets opportunities. Now it's clear. Jason Tatum is going to get by far the most shooting attempts on the team this season. He's going to have plenty of opportunities. Last year, Tatum only took 18 shots per game. And I say only, that's a lot of shots. But I would say that's going to be at least 22, 23 a game this season, especially considering what I pointed out. Kemba Walker's not here. Gordon Hayward's not here. So you don't have guys that are actually taking shots away from Jason Tatum. So part of being in the MVP conversation and part of winning the NBA MVP is you need to have the opportunities. He is going to have all the opportunities in the world with this team. All the opportunities. The ball's going to be in his hands more than anybody else on the team, which wasn't the case last year. And you also look at the fact that, all right, if you get his shot attempts to, say, 22, he's going to average 26, 27 points per game. So you're going to have the scoring numbers there. And here's the other thing. You have to want to win the award, right? LeBron James, he could win it all the time, but he's going to rest after a short season, right? Unless the Lakers are just so dominant in the West, right, and say they win by like 8 or 9 games, like they have clearly the best record, and LeBron's averaging close to a triple-double or something along those lines, LeBron's not going to be in the conversation because he's going to be resting games. He's not going to put the proper effort level in that he needs to on the defensive end all the time because he knows his team just needs to get to the postseason, right? Well, like with LeBron now, the regular season's not that important. It's about chasing down 6 rings, and he's got 4 of them. And then when you think about, all right, Anthony Davis, he could be an MVP candidate, right? But Anthony Davis is playing with LeBron. And by the way, with LeBron, Anthony Davis is going to lead that team in a bunch of categories. He's probably going to lead the team in scoring, which he did a year ago. He's going to lead the team in rebounds. He's going to lead the team in blocks. So that takes votes away from LeBron. Same thing with LeBron. Well, he's the best player on the team, but Davis has the best numbers. They take numbers away from each other. The Clippers, think about a guy on that team that could win the MVP. Kawhi, his best finish is third, and he doesn't play enough to win it. Load management, he's the king of load management. Okay, Giannis Antetokounmpo, just coming off the Supermax contract that he signed on Tuesday. He's now won 2 in a row. I'm telling you, he's going to have voter fatigue. There will be voter fatigue with Giannis, and here's why. Last 2 years, he's won the MVP. He's come up short in the postseason. And I know it's a regular season award, but there is going to be voter fatigue. The other thing with the Bucks is now the postseason is obviously way more important to them, right? So they're more focused on the postseason. I don't think they're going to be winning at like a 60-win pace based on like an 82-game schedule. I know there's only 72 games, but I don't think their winning percentage is going to be like it has been in years past where it's like, all right, they're by far the best team during the regular season. They had last year the best defense. They had an unbelievable offense. I just don't see that being the case this year with the Bucks. They're going to be a better postseason team by bringing a guy like Drew Holiday, but they may take a step back in terms of the regular season because they don't need to push in the regular season anymore. And let's also not dismiss the fact that they need to focus on the postseason, and they lost some of their depth in the Drew Holiday trade. All right, Durant's another guy that could win the MVP as a former MVP. He's not going to play enough because they're going to monitor his minutes coming off the Achilles injury. Steph Curry, I don't see the Warriors being good enough. Now, if Klay Thompson was healthy, which he's not, he tore his Achilles, then I could see Steph Curry being in the conversation, getting the Warriors back into a postseason conversation, maybe competing for the scoring title. But now that Klay Thompson's not in the mix, I could see the Warriors missing out in the postseason. At best, they're like a 7 or 8 seed. James Harden not happening this year. We don't know where he's going to end up. So the Rockets may not push him to the full extent as they begin the season because they want to make sure, okay, let's not get this guy hurt. Let's get him to a new place. He's not going to win the MVP. Now, Embiid's a guy that I could see getting into the conversation because Doc's going to get him motivated. But I can't bank on his health, right? Embiid always misses time due to injuries. And I would imagine Doc Rivers is going to give him nights off because he wants to make sure he's ready for the postseason. Damian Lillard. Now, that's a guy to put real consideration to in terms of the MVP. But his team's not going to be top four in the West, right? Because you think about the Western Conference. You got the Lakers. You got the Clippers. You got the Nuggets. Are you going to find a way to get into that top four conversation if you're the Portland Trailblazers? I just don't see them being a top four team in the Western Conference. So that's why I look at the opportunity, right? The Celtics have a real shot to finish in the top three in the East. You think about the Nets, you think about the Bucks, you think about Miami. Celtics have a chance, the Sixers, to finish in the top three. So what Tatum's going to need to do is lead this team to a top three finish. And then he's going to have to be the main engine, which he's going to be. His scoring average is going to be up somewhere at 26, 27 points per game. So that's why I look at all these other guys, the normal contenders we'd see for the MVP. For a lot of reasons for those guys, and I went through them all, I just don't see them being in the MVP conversation this season because of their particular situations. LeBron needs time off. He just won a championship. Harden's going to get traded. Durant's coming off an Achilles. Steph Curry has a crappy team. It's very unlikely to see a guy, or it has been, really, with the exception of Russell Westbrook in recent history, you don't win the MVP if you finish outside the top four in your conference. And Westbrook needed that narrative where he had the triple doubles. I quite frankly don't think he deserved MVP that season. It's a different conversation. But he needed to average a triple double to get the MVP. Ordinarily, the guy is top four in his conference, sometimes, most of the time, top two or three. And Russell Westbrook was the exception to the rule, right? So the two guys that I would bank on right here are Luka and Tatum. Now, here's the thing with Luka. Last year, way better numbers than Tatum. 28 a game, 9.4 rebounds, 8.8 assists. He's not going to have Porzingis to start the year, and Porzingis helps open up the floor for them in terms of the spacing. Luka very, very quietly didn't shoot the three ball well last year. I believe he's a better shooter than that, and I think his numbers will get better. But when you look at the West, it's much easier to see the Celtics finishing in the top three in terms of the regular season than it is seeing the Dallas Mavericks finish in the top three in terms of the Western Conference. Because in the Western Conference, you have the Lakers, the Clippers, the Nuggets, the Jazz, who all finished in front of the Mavs last season. And I brought up Damian Lillard. That's another team where I think like the Mavs and the Blazers kind of at a similar level in terms of where they're at in terms of the Western Conference hierarchy. And here's the thing with the Mavs. They're horrible defensively. They were 19th last year compared to the Celtics, who were sitting there at fourth. So that gives the Celtics in terms of the fact that, and here's one thing I'll give Brad Stevens a ton of credit for. He gets everybody to play defense. All right, even Enes Kanter, as bad as he was defensively in terms of like his actual defensive talent, he actually got out there and tried on defense. Like he gave you effort defensively. Brad Stevens coaches everybody up defensively. So when I just look at it from the perspective of who's got a better chance to finish higher in their conference, I get the Celtics with a much better chance to finish in the top three in the East than the Mavericks finishing in the top three in the Western Conference. So by that logic and by me eliminating all these other guys in terms of the MVP conversation, I could easily see Tatum finishing in the top five in terms of scoring this season because he's going to need to, right? Like this opportunity is kind of presenting itself to Tatum where it's like, all right, think about the narrative. Well, the Celtics were without Kemba Walker for the first whatever many games it is. Who knows what the number is going to be? I mean, would you be shocked if it's the first 10 to 15 games of the season based on Kemba Walker? We never know what's going on with that guy's knee. So he gets the max extension. Kemba Walker doesn't play. He was all NBA last year. He comes into this season. He starts tearing it up at the beginning of the year. We all saw him take a leap last year. He averaged 25 and 10 and 5 in the postseason last year, and I don't even think he played that well. And he's made it abundantly clear that he's been working on his playmaking ability. He's going to become better with the reads when he gets into the paint. He's going to be able to read, kick it out to the corners, get guys open for threes. If he gets this team to a top three seed and he finishes in the top five in terms of scoring this season, and he's close to 10 rebounds a game in terms of that category as well. We all know he's an outstanding defender. He's a really good defender, especially he's an outstanding help defender. And that's a great thing about the Jaylen Brown, Jason Tatum combination, so to speak, is Jaylen Brown is a great on-ball defender, not great off the ball. Jason Tatum is incredible off the ball. He's a great help defender. So that's why when I look at it and I go through the possible candidates for MVP, that's why I put Tatum at the top of the list because of all those other situations and the opportunity, right? Kyrie and KD kind of cancel each other out. When you look at some of the other duos, Kawhi and Paul George kind of cancel each other out. And Kawhi doesn't play enough games. You look across the league, you see all these combinations of guys. Tatum is the guy. Now, Jaylen Brown's his running mate, but there's a clear pecking order there, right? Like, Jaylen Brown's not the offensive talent that Jason Tatum is. So Tatum's going to have the opportunity to lead this team in terms of what he does offensively. That's why I'm predicting him to win MVP, because now even Brad Bernie Sanders Stevens can't stop Tatum from taking all the shots he wants. This dude's going to get 23, 24, 22 shots a night, whatever he wants, because you can't justify anybody taking shots away from Jason Tatum anymore. He's going to get all those opportunities. All right, a lot more to get into. The number 617-779-7937. I do have one big concern with the C's. It has nothing to do with Tatum, obviously. I just predict him to win MVP. But there is one big concern that I have about the Celtics. We're about a week away from the regular season. It has nothing to do with Kemba Walker. We'll get into it in just a little bit here on WEI. All right, we're with you until 1 a.m. So that's my big prediction for the Celtics this season. Jason Tatum, MVP of the NBA. You need a narrative? He's got that. Kemba Walker's out. He needs to take over clearly as a number one guy. And even when Kemba's back, he's a number one guy. Who are we kidding now? Kemba's damaged goods at this particular point in time. In fact, you may see Kemba Walker coming off the bench when he comes back, and he may stay on the bench because you're going to have to limit his minutes. He now has an arthritic knee. It's great that he got this stem cell injection. Fascinating that the Celtics think, oh, they got it right now. Although Danny Ainge, remember, Danny Ainge did say that we'll know more this year. When he was asked about, are you concerned about the long-term health, he said, we'll find out more this season. So that was at least some honesty from Danny Ainge. I mean, we kept hearing all this optimism about Kemba every time he dealt with a knee issue last year. And finally, Danny Ainge said in his press conference this season that we'll find out more this year. But when you look at Kemba Walker, you may have to limit his minutes going forward. I'm not just talking about this season. I'm just talking about having him be a productive player for you. You got to monitor his minutes for the rest of his time here, and he's still got 3 years remaining on that contract, where the best use of Kemba may be bringing him off the bench as this energizer bunny scorer. And I know it's not what everybody wants to hear, but that may just be where you're at with the player, where you can't trust him to play extended minutes because he's had three procedures on that knee, and it's arthritic. That's why you get a stem cell injection. But by the way, speaking of the bench, so this is my concern about the Celtics is their bench last year was 29th in the NBA in scoring. So my question is, who is the guy right now when you look at the Celtics? And maybe the answer is what I said. Maybe it's Kemba when he comes back. Maybe they just keep him coming off the bench. But who's the guy at the beginning of the season with Kemba Walker out of the equation? And quite frankly, we don't know what Kemba Walker is going to look like when he comes back, because there were times when he returned to the bubble or when he started playing in the bubble where he looked like he had the burst. And then there were other times where he didn't. You go back to that series against the Miami Heat, there were a lot of times where he couldn't get by a big man. And that's a real concern considering his game is based on his speed. His game is about going past people. His game is about his quickness. And if he doesn't have his quickness, he's just not an effective player whatsoever. And you could tell in the bubble that knee was really injuring him because he's somebody that requires a lot of lift when he takes his threes, when he takes his outside jump shots. And he just didn't have the lift. You look at all his misses. Go back and watch some of those games. All his misses are short. So Kemba Walker just didn't have, A, the faith in his knee, and B, the strength in his knee to be able to depend on it because it's, at this point, arthritic. So I don't know how long it lasts in terms of the shot, like how long the stem cell injection, how long it helps out for. I just look at all the stuff they did last year, and none of it worked. It worked temporarily at times, but none of it worked. But anyway, in terms of the bench, so who can go out there and create for others? So what you're going to have to do is keep Tatum or keep Jaylen Brown playing more minutes with the second unit. I would expect that Brad Stevens at the beginning of the year is going to give that opportunity more so to Smart than he would Jaylen Brown, because he sees Marcus Smart as a guy that can run the offense. He's played backup point guard. He's played starting point guard. I believe that Brad Stevens is going to give that opportunity to Marcus Smart and not Jaylen Brown. But what I would do is I would have a situation where you have Marcus Smart and Jaylen Brown on the court at the same time, and Tatum can run with the rest of the guys. Like, use the substitutions early on Smart and Brown, bring them back to start the second quarter, let Jason Tatum play the entire first quarter, because he can play by himself, not by himself, but he can be like the clear-cut number one guy with Brown and Smart off the floor, and Smart and Brown can kind of play it out together when they come back out for the second quarter. That's how I would do it. But if you look at the rest of this team in terms of the bench, Nesmith's a rookie and a shooter, so that's his role, shoot threes. We don't know what he's going to provide. We got a little look tonight. We'll get another look on Friday night, and then you're out there for the regular season. But it is worth assuming that he's going to at least be slow to start. You got a limited training camp. You didn't know you were on the Celtics until, like, what, a month and a half ago, right? So ordinarily, these rookies, it's going to be really difficult for them because ordinarily you got, and I'm not telling you it's the be-all, end-all, but you have summer league. You get into the system. Now it's like, oh, you got drafted last month, and now you got to get used to an NBA system, and now you got to go out and play. That's really, really difficult for guys to be able to develop that way. Tremont Waters, swing guy, not going to be playing much for the big team. We saw it tonight. Pritchard ends up with 16 points. He's going to have a role on that second unit. He's going to have a role on that bench unit, but he's not somebody you can depend on as a rookie. Jeff Teague was really good. He had his 4 threes tonight. Last year, though, it looked like he kind of lost his burst. Now, he did hit some threes tonight. We'll see what he looks like as we go into the season. But that's the one major issue if you look at this team is the bench. Are you going to have any contribution from the bench? Because you're asking a lot from Tatum, Brown, and Marcus Smart in terms of scoring the basketball. Now, the issue last year was you had too many chefs in the kitchen. Now it's like, well, do you have enough firepower offensively? Because you look at some of these other contenders across the sport, and the Celtics are trying to compete for a championship. That's what they're trying to do, right? Even though they got a younger team now, they get a younger core, they're trying to compete. They just made it to the Eastern Conference Finals. You look at the other contenders across the league, the Clippers, you look at that bench, they got Lou Williams. They added Ibaka, so they can play either Ibaka or Zubac coming off the bench. So you get those two guys, and you got Lou Williams, and not to mention they added a playmaker in Luke Kennard. They traded away Shamet for Kennard. Now, Kennard's been dealing with injuries for the majority of his career, but he can handle the ball. He can play in pick and rolls. He can definitely run a second unit. So you look at all that firepower coming off the bench from the Clippers. You look at the Lakers, what do? They got the sixth man of the year in Montrezl Harrell to come from the Clippers to the Lakers, and they added the runner-up in terms of the sixth man of the year in Dennis Schroeder. So they get depth and they get scoring punch, where LeBron and AD, they're going to do a lot of the lifting offensively, but they're going to be able to get some breaks here because we've seen Schroeder and Harrell play at a high level and carry second units last year in the case of Schroeder and last year in the case of Harrell, the last couple of years for Harrell. You look at a team like the Brooklyn Nets, who you're going to be competing with if you're the Celtics. Their bench, and Jared Allen should be starting, but they're going to start DeAndre Jordan. That's the Kevin Durant, Kyrie Irving tax is they brought over their friend DeAndre Jordan, and he's going to have to play major minutes. But you bring in basically an upgrade at the center position off the bench in Jared Allen. Landry Shamet, who they got in that Kennard trade, he can shoot, so that's a shooter off the bench. Joe Harris, Spencer Dinwiddie, or Caris LeVert's coming off the bench for the Nets. Think about this team. This is an incredibly deep team that Brooklyn has. Harris, Dinwiddie, or LeVert's coming off the bench. LeVert was dealing with a little bit of an injury right now, but he's got to be ready to go. But one of those three guys is coming off your bench to go with Allen and to go with Landry Shamet. That's a really good second unit. And you look at the Heat. My assumption would be with Miami is considering Dragic is coming off the foot injury, as we all saw in the playoffs last season in the NBA Finals, I would expect them to bring him off the bench. And we all saw what he did to the Celtics, right? He tore them apart in the Eastern Conference Finals. So you get Dragic coming off the bench. You have a proven defender in Avery Bradley coming off the bench. And if they really wanted to, like if they wanted to change up the starting lineup and put Bradley in the starting lineup to get more defense, they could either bring Duncan Robinson or Tyler Hero off the bench on the second unit. So that team's incredibly deep with a lot of options and a lot of shooters. So when you look at the Celtics and you juxtapose this with the other contenders or the team that consider themselves to be contenders, they don't have nearly the depth that was an issue last year, and it's going to be an issue again this season. Team is incredibly thin. Now, two guys I would look at in terms of possible moves, because remember, at some point, Danny Ainge is going to have to cash in on that trade exception, if you will. A team that I would look at that's going to be trying to send away pieces is the Detroit Pistons. And I know you signed Jeff Teague this offseason. We'll see what he does. And you have Peyton Pritchard, another point guard as well. But I would not mind kicking the tires on a Derrick Rose because it's not going to cost you a whole lot in terms of draft picks or anything. And by the way, Like, the Celtics have, what, the 26 pick this year? They sent that away. Like, they have all these picks. Like, Carson Edwards, all these picks that they've made over the past couple of years. Guys that aren't going to contribute to the team. Think about how many wasted picks the Celtics have made over the years. When you look at a guy like Derrick Rose, he's somebody that can come in and give you scoring punch off the bench. And you know what Derrick Rose is. He knows he's not the MVP of the NBA anymore. He knows that he's somebody that can run a second unit. He was coming off the bench in Minnesota. Now in Detroit, he's coming off the bench because they just drafted Killian Hayes, who's supposed to be the point guard of the future there in Detroit. He knows what his role is. And if you looked at his numbers from last year, he averaged 18 points a game on 49% shooting, 5 assists a game, 18 and 5 on nearly 50% shooting in 26 minutes a game. He was really good. It took him a couple of years to adjust to not being the dominant athlete that he once was, but he's got an outstanding floater game. He can still go by defenders, and he can still fill it up. And when you're looking at what you need, it's innings eaters during the regular season, right? And you don't have a lot of innings eaters. You have Jason Tatum, who's going to be carrying the team. You have Jaylen Brown, and you don't want Marcus Smart taking too many shots. You don't have innings eaters. Derrick Rose is an innings eater, where he can come off the bench, and he can get you between 15 and 18 points a night, and he only needs to play 20 to 26 minutes to be able to do that. He is instant offense off the bench. You look at his contract right now, he's making about $7 million per season. He's in the final year of his deal. And you look at Detroit, they just signed 1 million people this offseason. They're trying to compete, but they're also trying to rebuild at the same time. You brought in a rookie that's going to start at point guard, which means, yeah, you're trying to compete, but you're also trying to make sure that he's the future going forward. You gave Jeremy Grant a big contract. So you may be willing to say, well, Hayes is the guy for the future. We'll take some sort of asset for Derrick Rose. I wouldn't mind giving up a draft pick for Derrick Rose because he is a clear need for the Celtics team. I remember we talked about this with the Red Sox a couple of years ago. This is not last year, 2 years ago. In 19, where it's like they need bullpen help. They need guys that can give you innings out of the bullpen. And last year with the Red Sox, you need starters. You need scoring off the bench. Derrick Rose can clearly provide that, and he knows what his role is now. And he could be a significant contributor to this team in the postseason. Remember last year, you got nothing from your bench. Derrick Rose could be that guy. And I know you have a lot of point guards on this team, but I'm just looking at options that the Celtics could possibly look at as the season goes on that's not going to cost you a whole lot, and there's no commitment long-term. He's on the final year of a contract. All right, 617-779-7937 is the number. I do want to get to this. So Giannis Antetokounmpo signed his Supermax contract with the Milwaukee Bucks. I believe it's a good thing for the Celtics. I'll tell you why next year on WEI. All right, we're with you until 1 a.m. The number 617-779-7937. So if you didn't see today, the reigning defending two-time MVP and Defensive Player of the Year last season, Giannis Antetokounmpo signed his five-year, $228 million Supermax extension with the Milwaukee Bucks. So he's staying put in Milwaukee, the Greek freak. First of all, let me just say it's good for the NBA. Milwaukee has been an irrelevant franchise. Really, the last time they were relevant, you got to go back to when Ray Allen was in Milwaukee and they famously lost to the Philadelphia 76ers in 2001. And everybody still thinks that that was a rigged series because the 76ers got all the calls. That's when Allen Iverson was the MVP of the NBA. They went on to lose to the Lakers 4-1 in the NBA Finals. If you ever want to go down a rabbit hole of NBA conspiracy theories, go back to the fouls in that game. Go back to the comments that both Ray Allen and George Karl made. But anyway, the Bucks have not been a relevant franchise. It's good for the NBA to have a team in the Midwest that is actually legitimate and is actually relevant, right? That's good for the NBA. Like in the NFL, it doesn't matter. Green Bay is relevant. Kansas City's relevant, right? The stars end up staying there because they're quarterbacks. In the NBA, how often do we see a guy in a small market want to get out? So Oklahoma City was relevant for a long period of time with Durant and Westbrook. It's good for the league that Giannis stayed there. And the other reason it's good for the league and the other reason it's good for the Celtics is no Miami super team. Massive for the Celtics, right? Because if you just look at it from the free agency standpoint, Giannis was due to become a free agent in 2021. He is the same agent as Bam Adebayo. And if you look at that Miami team, it's a very appealing organization, not only because they have Bam and they have Jimmy Butler, but they have Pat Riley, the godfather of the NBA, and they have a guy like Eric Spoelstra. So that was a team, you get Bam, you get Giannis, you got Jimmy Butler, maybe down the road, Jimmy Butler gets older, you get somebody else in there, but Bam and Giannis, I mean, that would be a force in the Eastern Conference. So I'm glad that we didn't create another super team in this league. And really, there's going to be no super team in general this season, right? Because, look, the Lakers are by far and overwhelmingly the favorites to win the NBA championship. But it's not like, oh, my God, the Lakers are so much better than everybody else. They have LeBron and they have AD. They're the clear-cut favorite. I'm not telling you they're not. But it's not like the Warriors a couple of years ago where it's Steph Curry, Klay Thompson, Kevin Durant, Draymond Green. The only way that that team was ever going to lose is if what happened was Durant went down with an injury and Klay Thompson went down with an injury. And I really still believe to this day, if Klay Thompson doesn't go down in that series against the Raptors, the Warriors still win. So this whole idea of super teams across the NBA, I'm not the biggest fan of it. I thought that last year in terms of the postseason, it was much more intriguing. It was much more interesting, right? Like, even though the Celtics end up losing to the Heat, like, that was a crazy storyline. Oh, my God, the Heat are in the conference finals against the Celtics. Even in the West, it's like, holy crap. The Nuggets with Jokic and Murray, like, they came on. I'm much more for this more open system, so to speak. Not system, but this open NBA. And I'm not telling you that there's a million teams or that there's 15 teams that have a chance to win the NBA championship, but I do feel like there's more teams than there ordinarily is. Like, if you look at the Eastern Conference, you could see the Nets coming out of there. You could see the Bucks coming out of there if Giannis and company get it right. Obviously, Miami did it last year. You could see them coming out of the Eastern Conference. And if Tatum just takes a leap to the next level, like I'm predicting him to take that leap, you could see the Celtics coming out of the Eastern Conference. When you look at the West, obviously the Lakers are the favorite, but you could see the Clippers coming out of the West if Kawhi and Paul George kind of figure things out there, if they like Ty Lue more than they like Doc. Who knows when it comes to that particular situation? But you can get into conversations about six teams or four teams in the East. And still, when you look at the West, it's tough to see somebody beating LeBron James. Well, look, the Nuggets were in the conference finals a year ago. They beat a team like the Clippers. I could never see the Nuggets just because of the matchup with Jokic against Davis winning. But the league's better this way. And it's better for the sport when a guy actually stays in the Midwest and he commits to staying in the Midwest. Now, we'll see. Giannis just signed the Supermax today. So a lot of years on that contract, 5 years in particular. So we'll see down the road if 3 years from now, Giannis says, yeah, I'm good. I got to go. Yeah, I got to get the hell out of here. I got to decide to leave at this particular point in time. I needed to take the bag now. I took the money. But 2 years from now, I want out of Milwaukee. So we'll see if he actually stays committed there. But I am excited for the short-term outlook of the NBA because there was that possibility of Giannis Antetokounmpo in 2021 becoming a free agent and making a super team, whether it be in L.A. or whether it be in Miami or whether he makes his own super team with Toronto because of him and the connection with Masai Ujiri. I am glad that at least for right now, we're not going to have a super team in the NBA. Yeah, the Lakers are pretty damn close to being the overwhelming favorites after coming off a championship a season ago. But the Lakers are not a super team. They're a really good team. They're not a super team. They're not the Heat with Wade, Bosch, and LeBron. And they're definitely not the Warriors with KD and Steph Curry and Klay Thompson and that group of players. So I am happy about that when it comes to the NBA. All right, thanks to Nick LaPan for producing. I'll be back with you on Thursday. Have a great night, everybody. Be safe and be well.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Listen to every MLB game live.
In the deep left center field, it is high, it is far, it is gone.
Stream minor league affiliates.
The Midwest League home run leader.
And watch the best baseball highlights and look-ins on MLB Big Inning. MLB At Bat is your all-in-one live baseball subscription for only $3.99 per month.
Deep left field, it's going to go. Alvarez ties the game.
Subscribe to At Bat within the MLB app today. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.